Hey everyone, thanks for coming back and joining us after the break. Like she said, my name is Ivan A. Dozier. Since we are in Minneapolis, I feel the need to let you guys know I'm not related to Twins all-star second baseman Brian Dozier, though hopefully I can still be an all-star up here. So first I want to give you guys just a little bit of an outline on what I'm going to be talking about, so there's no surprises here. Introduction and objectives, I'll go through my materials and methods and talk both about my experimental design and then also the sampling procedures that we implemented here. And then give you guys a look into some of our preliminary results that we found in both soil physical properties and chemical properties, as well as our crop yields. So I'm sure most of you here know what cover cropping is because we've been talking about it for the previous sessions, but just to catch any of you up who might not have been around, cover crops are simply growing something in traditional fallow periods between our cash crop rotations. And so if you're a window gazer like me and was looking out the window on your trip up here to Minneapolis, you might have noticed a lot of brown fallow fields, and cover crops is simply introducing a little bit of green out there. And on the small scale, we can use it for soil improvement, and there's also some large-scale issues that we like to talk about with carbon sequestration, hypoxia, adding some diversity, a lot of those words that like to get tossed around at conferences like this. There is some variation in cover cropping, which is important to note when regarding this study, that there's a lot of different varieties that you can use when selecting cover crops. You can also implement various ranges of tillage practice in tandem with cover crops. Your application and termination methods can vary, and of course location and climate is going to affect the results that you see from cover cropping depending on where you are in the world. So why do we plant cover crops? What's the point here? And like I said, on the small scale we're looking for improvement of the soil. And so if you are starting out with the soil that is of poor quality, then you definitely have some facets to stand to gain from cover crops. And that could be anything from a yield boost to improving some of that structure to get more of a long-term effect from cover crops. And also if you have compacted soils, cover crops have been touted as a potential relief for soil compaction. Even if your soils aren't poor, you can still stand to plant. There's still been some advantages of cover crops that have been listed, such as erosion control. Obviously, if you have a good soil, you want to keep it that way and keep it in place. You can also see a soil organic matter increase, and of course, nitrogen scavenging. You don't want to apply any more fertilizer than necessary, and if you do, you want to make sure that it stays there on your field. So, one of the things that we looked at here was tillage practice. We both looked at both conventional tillage and no-till. And obviously, you're going to see different effects from cover crops depending on which tillage method was implemented. Like I said before, under conventional tillage, you're going to want to keep that soil in place. And so we wanted to look at our levels of soil carbon and make sure that we weren't losing any carbon, which would be indicative of maybe some erosion issues. And that's what's been seen in the past under conventional tillage. Under no-till, cover crops have been used to attempt and mirror some of the effects of conventional tillage that you might not get when using no-till, like I said earlier, something like compaction or maybe a yield hit from no-till, and so we want to mitigate those potential negative effects of no-till by using cover crops. So the objectives of this study were to determine the effects of cover crops on soil physical and chemical properties. We also want to look at the effects of cover crops across both till and no-till, evaluate the potential for nitrogen uptake, and the effect on crop yields, and just kind of assess the overall feasibility of using cover crops in Illinois. We have pretty good soils to start out with, and so we wanted to see, is this a feasible practice that we want to look at and recommend to others? So the location was in Urbana, Illinois, the University of Illinois. We've got pretty indicative soils for the site there, Drummer, Catlin, and Flanagan. Like I said, pretty average. Drummer is our state soil. So no surprises there. Of our cover crop varieties that we selected, we tried to get a broad array of different varieties that also had different advantages that people use them for. We had three different grass varieties, annual ryegrass, cereal rye, and spring oats. Like I said, we were using for erosion control to utilize those thick fibrous root systems and then also increase the soil organic matter. We had a couple of legumes that in the past have been used to sort of restore poor soils by improving soil stability and also their nitrogen fixing qualities that we often look to legumes for. And then we also had a couple brassica varieties that are rapeseed and dyke and radish that can really get deep into the soil profile and affect soils on a really deep level and also kind of aerate the soil, and they've also been seen for pest control. So my experimental design, to kind of familiarize you with that, like I said here, we've got on the left side year one, and we've got that split between corn and soybean as the previous crop, and then we planted the cover crops across like this, so you can see corn and soybean have slightly different cover crop usage. Following soybean, we use the legumes knowing that they'd be preceding corn and to try to avoid some of those issues that we've seen in the past of cereal rye preceding corn. And then we would rotate those. So following into year two, then we switch the corn plots, we planted soy, and vice versa. And so that is how we lined up the cover crops there. So that's important to note that the brassicas stayed the same, annual ryegrass also stayed the same, but then we rotated our hairy vetch out with cereal rye, and we rotated our clover and spring oats. So like I said earlier, there's a lot of variability when it comes to cover crops and cover crop practices, the way that we're managing these things. And so I want to let you guys know I won't give you, you know, bore you with the specific details of exactly how and when our planting occurred, but it is important to note that our seeding and termination and the general way in which we manage these plots were all based upon the Midwest Cover Crop Council's recommendations. And so anyone interested in starting a cover crop operation for themselves can look to them for those guidelines that they've set up. We sampled on the first week of May in both 2014 and 2015 with a hydraulic tractor probe, and we also cut it up based on depth from 0 to 15, 15 to 30, and 30 to 45 centimeters. Like I said, the physical properties that we are looking at are bulk density and water aggregate stability to give us an indication of the soil structure and its general quality. We also looked at the chemical properties of total inorganic nitrogen as well as soil organic matter, so to kind of compare those with the physical properties that we were looking at. And then we did take some cover crop biomass, although especially for the first year, that didn't really tell us a whole lot other than how much we had overwintering, because we did only take overwintering biomass. And we also did look at the cash crop's yield. One thing that's important before we jump into the data is to take a look at the weather. This is a graph from 2000, showing the average temperature in November. And so whenever I started this project, you can see all the way over there at the right is the winter that we had. It was the whole polar vortex year. And so we had some difficulty with cover crop establishment there. Here's a side-by-side comparison of our precipitation and temperature. And you can see during the time that the cover crops had been sown out there and we were looking at establishment, not only did we have abnormally cold temperatures both years when compared to the average, but we also had pretty low precipitation too, which is obviously indicative of a little bit of difficulty of establishment. So with that, we will jump right into the preliminary results. One thing that's important is to note that these results came from one full phase of cover crop usage. And so we had the cash crop out there, and then the cover crop was sown out into the standing cash crop, and then we had another cash crop rotation, and then that's when our sampling occurred. So it's important to note that throughout this whole process, there's been a full rotation of both cover crops. So like I said earlier, in the ones that rotate, you'll see that we have hairy vetch and cereal rye. These results have gone through that full rotation and have experienced both the hairy vetch treatment and the cereal rye treatment as part of that whole thing. One of the big things that we saw here was an interaction between that phase and the rotation. So we would see something in the plots immediately following corn or soybeans, and we saw that with our bulk density, water aggregate stability, and total inorganic nitrogen, and so I'll touch on those in my upcoming data. So the first thing I want to show you guys here is our bulk density, and we saw an effect. Didn't really see anything in the corn that was significant, but we did see an effect in the plots immediately following soybean, and that was that our bulk density was significantly lower than the control over all of the cover crop treatments. And so in some of the previous presentations, I've seen mentioned that we were kind of expecting a little bit the activity of the plant roots on lowering the bulk density. And although we didn't see that in corn, we did see it here after the soybean rotation. And so that was true for all of the rotations, for all the different cover crop varieties, I should say. Moving into water aggregate stability, those results aren't as clean as bulk density. Of course, water aggregate stability, measuring how well the soil is going to stand up in resistance, it's kind of an erosion resistance measurement. And so you can see here that the higher stability would be indicative of a better structured soil. And so you can see here we have, following the soybean, the hairy vetch and cereal rye rotation, as well as the daikon radish, both had significantly higher water aggregate stability than did the control. And then in the corn, we didn't see the same kind of results. Once again, not a tremendous amount of significance there. We did see a lower stability under the annual ryegrass, but that's just about all we saw following the corn in terms of the physical properties. And so we did see some effects following the soybean in the physical properties, and then keep in mind, too, that's just from 2 years. So to me, that's a little bit impressive to so quickly start seeing some reactions from the soil under these treatments. When we move into total inorganic nitrogen, then this is what we're looking for with that scavenging ability of those cover crops to really be taking up some of that nitrogen. So what we're actually looking at for some of these overwintering varieties, such as the hairy vetch and the cereal rye and the annual ryegrass, what we want to see is actually a lower amount of soil nitrogen, because then that would indicate to us that it had actually been taken up into the plant's biomass. And so when we look over, once again, in the following soy rotation, we do see that with both annual ryegrass and the hairy vetch rotation. We also see that with rapeseed. You also see high values of red clover and daikon radish, kind of matching those of the control. And so that's not to say that those cover crops simply don't work at taking up the nitrogen into their biomass. It just says that by the time we went out there to sample, those cover crops are not overwintering cover crops, and if they had taken up that nitrogen, they'd already returned it back to the soil. Once again, we look over in corn and see that we don't have a lot of significance there, but we do have an effect from the annual ryegrass rotation of lower nitrogen as well. And so it's good to see some significance there from the total inorganic nitrogen. Finally, we'll jump here into soil organic matter. And we do see an effect from the control on our hairy vetch and cereal rye rotation. And so this is something that was not significant across an interaction, but depending on the rotation, this is both corn and soybeans together after the full phase. And we did see some spikes there with the radish and rapeseed, but the big takeaway is that significantly higher than the control was the hairy vetch and cereal rye rotation. And then, of course, the all-important yields. That's something that, of course, we want to know. And there's been some heavily mixed results when it comes to cover crops on how exactly they're affecting our cash crop yields. And so we want to make it important that this is across. If you're going to implement that in a corn-soybean rotation, what you're going to see. We didn't get a lot of response from any cover crop on the bottom line there, which is your soybean yields, and that's both till and no-till, as you can see there. Most of them did not deviate too far from the average. When we do get there into corn, and those are the triangles up on the top end of this graph, that is where we see some effects, and they are negative effects across our annual ryegrass. Cereal rye, the hairy vetch, is closer to the average there, but as you can see, it's still lower compared to some of those other data points, but we definitely took a hit from our annual ryegrass plots. So to kind of sum things up, like I said, this is data after one full corn and soybean cash crop rotation. And so one of the things that's important to keep in mind when implementing cover crops is there are a lot of variables that take place. And so we implemented this using a corn-soybean rotation, which is very common in Illinois and very common throughout the Midwest. And so this data is important to note that it stays with that rotation. If you're implementing a different kind of rotation, you might not see the same effects that we saw from this. Also, this data is from two seasons, and they were challenging seasons at that. Like I showed you, the weather was a little bit difficult with us. We did have some difficulty of establishment early on, and so that's something to keep in mind as well for cover cropping practices, is do be mindful of the weather, and that can potentially throw a wrench into some of the plans that you found, and so something worth being mindful of. Like I said, the previous crop is important in enabling that cover crop. And as we move forward too into future research, these were single varieties. We did have a couple of those rotations, but they weren't out there at the same time. And so we were just looking at one specific cover crop, trying to see the kind of responses we would get from that. And so when you're looking at the previous crop, not only is it important for the rotation, but also for land use history, any previous cover crops that might have been on the land is important to note when taking a look at that data. And these results are from just 2 years of a total 5-year study, and from just one location of a multi-location study. And so stay tuned. There's going to be some more data coming out from this soon to see if these effects are augmented as we move forward in time, or if this is kind of a one-time boost that we'll only see once and then kind of fade into insignificance. And also we're looking at multiple locations throughout the state. So like I said, Urbana has some pretty good soils. So if the soils are at a poorer location in Illinois, we might see some more significant effects. We might see some different effects depending on how those soils interact with the cover crops that we're using. So with that, I'd like to thank my committee members, Maria Villamil, my main advisor, and also Emerson Nafsinger and Adam Davis. We have a great farm team out there that's really helped with managing these plots and getting out there and just making sure that the management happens in a timely manner. Like I said, with lots of that variability, it's important to have those proper management practices. Thank Gavin and Stacy and all the other lab members for their help and support with this project. And, of course, our team of undergrads for slaving away at this data with me. So with that, thanks for listening, and I'll take any questions you may have this time.
We have time really for one short question.
Okay, it's fine with me.
Did you drill the cover crops, or did you broadcast them?
It was broadcast out there, so into the standing crop.
So how much biomass did you have?
The first year, the only biomass we had was from cereal rye. And like I said, on the very first slide here, if I can back up there, this picture was from last year's emerging cover crops. And so one of the things that's important too, like we took overwintering biomass. So clearly some stuff was coming up. But that doesn't mean that it survived very long, and especially with that first year where it was really cold and we didn't have a whole lot of precipitation, we did not see stands like this. We only had the grasses come up, and so there's definitely some difficulty of incorporation. Cereal rye was a clear winner for which crop was producing the most biomass.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.